This is the Saturday Supplement. I'm Frank Lewis. My books are like my children. They're all equally good, Vincent Carmody told me when I asked which of the nine books was best. Born in 1944, Vincent worked with On Post for 38 years, 28 as postman in Douai. Retired in 2007 with his wife, Kathleen Ní Cinn. They have a family of three, Kevin, Norma and Karen. When speaking about his hometown, historian and author Vincent says, I've had a long love affair with Listowel. Today, the nine books Vincent Carmody has conceived, researched, produced, launched and distributed over the past 40 years. We're visiting special places Vincent associates with the books, guided by Vincent. His supporter throughout thick and thin, Tom Donovan, will be with us along the way. And the third person who'll travel with us today is Karen Trench, who's going to sing us a song as we go along. And as well, in this first hour, in historic Drummond House, Jimmy Dinhan will join us to talk about Vincent's second book, North Kerry Camera, published in 1989. Tom Dillon will be with us to talk about book number three, Snapshots of an Irish Market Town, published in 2012. In the offices of Solicitor Louis O'Connell in the square in Listowel, in a unique departure from Listowel, co-editors John Cushion will be with us on book number four, Newcastle West, Snapshots of 2017, and Tom Donovan on book number six, Limerick, Snapshots of the Treaty City and County, published in 2021. To begin, Tadhg Moriarty will have something to say on the very first volume, the centenary book on Listowel Emmett's GAA Club, published by the club in 1984. And we'll talk about the other four books between 10 and 11. This programme is recorded on January the 8th. For future programmes, your story on Vincent, his books and their special places, write Frank Lewis, Gillon, Mangerton Road, Muckross, Killarney. Email franklewismangerton@gmail.com. Text 083-300-3300 or phone 066-712-3666. To begin, in 1984, members of Listowel Emmett's GAA Club centenary was coming up in 1985. Best attended meeting for a long time to plan the celebration. Great competition for the plum jobs. Everybody suddenly realised it was getting late. The pubs will be shut, as the long-standing club secretary, who for years had been collecting football photos, a general stampede to the door. Maybe the second last person out said, what about doing a book? To which the last out said, Vincent will do that. Club chairman in 1985. Tadhg Moriarty, was there one standout memory of the centenary of 1985?
I suppose all the hard work that we brought on ourselves. It was a big undertaking because people weren't too off air with what had happened back the years. Vincent got stuck into it and did a great job, ably assisted by John Mulnow and Father Kieran O'Shea. Yeah. I was chairman, Mikey Kennelly was president, and we really had a background role, but we had to run the club when all this thing was going on as well. It's a monument in Listowel. It's referred to locally as the Yellow Book.
The Yellow, the cover, of course, yeah.
Yeah, the Yellow Book. In fact, there's one great character in Listowel. Somebody asked him downtown one night about some incident that happened way back in the day. Tom Dwyer is his name, and Tom said, I know it's true. He was contradicted, and he said, I saw it in the Yellow Book.
Oh! By the way, I should have begun by saying, we're in the clubhouse, the wonderful club premises that the Listowel Emmetts have on the Tarbert Road, and we're looking out on the pitch, on the stand, and on the lights, the great lights there. Vincent?
The oldest photograph was a photograph of the Listowel Independence team taken in 1908, and it was captained by T.F. O'Sullivan. Oh. Now, T.F. O'Sullivan was also a journalist, and he worked for the Freeman's Journal in Dublin, and he actually was the man, apart from being secretary of the Listowel GAA, he was involved, he was the secretary of the county board here in Kerry, mm-hmm. and he also worked in Dublin, he was a great researcher, mm-hmm. and he actually initiated the Rule 28, the ban, because he actually framed that rule. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, happily enough, to Sean Kelly, one of the later presidents, took it away.
Tight.
The book is very heavily based on Street League, or as we call it in Listowel, Town League teams. There was a huge history of the Town League in Listowel with four teams. This became more important around here than North Kerry or county competitions. I sort of photographed as a photograph there of a committee around 40 years ago. I particularly like that because a lot of the people in it have now gone to their eternal rewards. They were the people that handed it on to us at the time. I was chairman, Vincent was secretary, and we carried a big load. Today, clubs are much more relevant, important to their communities, whereas at the time, it was a struggle to keep clubs in a prominent position.
Mm-hmm. Vincent, everything was coming together. The photographs, you wanted more photos than text. But then you got cold feet.
I did, because it was the first time I ever got involved in something like that. Basically, I said, if this goes wrong, I'm finished. So I brought in two people that were involved in the club. John Mullinow, he had been teaching St. Michael's, also had edited a sports field brochure back in the 1960s, mm-hmm. plus the fact we had Father Kieran O'Shea, a local priest,
who was
a wonderful historian. Indeed. So they came on board, and I was happy then.
Indeed. Tig, was money ever a concern?
Listowel is a great town to support anything like that. When we redeveloped this, what you're looking at right here now, 23 or 4 years ago, like
a major expenditure at that time.
Huge. And
wonderful. I mean, the hall that we're in, you have as well got the changing rooms, and you have the kitchen area.
And this was all done to, I was actually chairman of it, of this development as well. And the one thing that we did say was that anything we do would be a very high standard.
Vincent?
The old book is a template for a new book. The generations that have passed since we done that book in 1985 have been the glory years of Listowel Emmets. Mm-hmm. We've won more in the interim years than they ever done before.
Mm-hmm. Ty?
There are two very good articles there about the progression of the club. You see, the club was formed less than 12 months after the GA was formed.
It must be one of the oldest in the county.
We think it is. The progression of the club, the various names it went under during the years.
Listowel Temperance, Listowel Independent, Black Cock's Feather, sponsored by Maurice Walsh, and eventually Emmets. I mean, it reflects the times that we're all in.
Oh, it does, yeah.
Yeah.
The way the community has embraced the name of the Emmets now. Every child you see walking around the street and everything, they all have Emmets gear on them and everything. It's very satisfying to elder lemons like Vincent and myself.
Vincent,
to see,
I mean,
that.
Yeah, this Listowel Emmets Centenary started it all. Now you had the appetite to edit and publish, and also the confidence, a further 8 books in the following 40 years. This started it all for you.
I never had any kind of ambitions to be any type of a book publisher. It's something I got to love.
As you have proven for 40 years
now.
Yeah,
plus the fact I've been very lucky. I've the material that I could have sourced, some of it fell into my lap with others. Other times and other books. Like, I've been very lucky to have made great friends along the way.
Indeed. Tig, finally, Vincent spent 38 years as a postman, in and out of every home, business, social and cultural activity in Listowel. Did that help, do you think?
It did, of course. He was renowned for walking around the town after his post-work hours with a folder under his arm, mm-hmm. and people would say, "Who's the target tonight?" And he was always on the watch out for stuff. He has a story there about a skip outside a house on Church Street there, and he was seen poking around it. All that kind of stuff. The proof is the book. That's and all the subsequent books.
Yeah.
But there you are, unless you have somebody that wants to do this stuff, it won't happen.
No, indeed. We have 8 more books in their special places. Tig, thanks indeed for talking to me. And now Karen Trench would sing The Mighty Grenville Tea. But first, Vincent, the story behind the song.
Well, what happened really was John B. Keane came from an area in Listowel called Church Street. Mm-hmm. And Church Street were always represented by a team called The Ashes. Now, in the mid-1950s, when John B. got a Bartolo bar in William Street. Mm-hmm. He went into Glown territory. And John B's best customers when he opened up were from the Greenville side. You were the Healy's, the Lynch's.
So he changed clubs?
The Murphy's, the Lynch's, yeah. And the Hartness. And John B decided cutely his best customers were from Greenville, so he decided to throw in his lot. It was before the Bosman ruling, and he took advantage, and he decided to write. The only time Greenville ever won anything in Listowel was when John B was playing in 58 or 59, and they won the Troy Cup.
Come all you true-born Irishmen, from here to Healy's Gate, and I'll sing for you a verse or two, as I my tale relate. You may speak about Cuchulain Bold, or the mighty men from Sneem, but they wouldn't hold a candle to that gallant Greenville team. The dry ball won't suit them, said the pundits from the town, but they pulverise the ashes and they mesmerise the clown. Oh. Next came the famous Borough, their fortunes to redeem, but they shrivel up like autumn leaves before the Greenville team.
Hey! The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shop and Seafood Bar, the Mall Tralee. Treat yourself to the freshest takeaway fish and chips today, right in the heart of Tralee.
Sing you a ballad and beauty extol, as I found it long ago in the town of...
Vincent Carmody's 9 books and their special places. We're now in Drummond House, built in the 1660s for William Fitzmaurice, 19th Lord Kerry, and now owned by the Ryan family. As I said a few minutes ago, Listowel Emmett Centenary book started it all. You now had the appetite to edit and publish and ferret out more old photographs. The late Donovan Hadley, local historian and owner of Drummond House, gave a box of glass negatives, photographs taken by amateur photographer Captain James Raymond, a member of the Raymond owners of Drummond House since the late 1600s. And that was the beginning of what in 1989 became your second book, North Kerry Camera. We're joined by Jimmy Deanahan, a keen ferreter out of all things himself. Vincent, those glass negatives had to be handled very carefully, like handling the crown jewels.
Exactly. Donovan Hadley knew that I was doing this book of photographs, and he went down to the library and gave the box to Eileen Sullivan, the then librarian. Eileen contacted me and I went up to see these photographs, and she gave me the box and I took them out of the box. After I had handled the glass negatives, I realised they were very, very important. Mm-hmm. And I got onto Noel Kassan of the National Library, mm-hmm. originally from SD, and he advised me, look, Vincent, these are of national importance. They should go into the National Archive. Mm-hmm. And he said to me, is there any way you can bring them up? We'll copy them, we'll give you copies. Mm. So I took them up. They're up in the National Library, up in the archives now. Mm-hmm.
Very good. Jimmy, finding those glass negatives was finding gold.
Absolutely. And photography, I suppose, in Listowel and North Kerry started here in this house. Mm-hmm. So it's appropriate that we are here this morning. First of all, I'd like just to recognise the achievement of Vincent here. We owe him a huge debt of gratitude, mm-hmm. not only in Listowel, North Kerry, Kerry, but Ireland. But for Vincent, mm-hmm. many of these images would be lost. Mm-hmm.
For this book, the North Kerry Camera book, it formed the idea of the getting the various writers mm-hmm. to write an introduction to each series mm-hmm. of pictures. And when I went to Brian McMahon, who had been my teacher, who we looked up in awe, mm-hmm. I said to Brian McMahon, would you ever like to do the write about the people? Mm-hmm. And he said, Vincent, only on one condition that I can write the foreword.
Jimmy, is there a photograph in the North Kerry Camera that stands out for you?
One of the staff at McKenna's, because it's all men that are there, but there's one woman, and that was my auntie.
Oh.
We were not aware of that photograph. But then I inquired more about that particular photograph, and actually a number of those people, they were in jail during the War of Independence, because John McKenna was the leading figure in the War of Independence here. Mm-hmm. Mick Wolfe, who was in jail as well, passed on the message that it was my aunt that kept the business going in that period of time. Mm-hmm. And Jack McKenna confirmed that to me. There's another photograph that's very important, and that's the one of the funeral of Edward Sheehy in the Civil War. Mm-hmm. And it was quite unique. It was June of 1922, mm-hmm. and the Civil War hadn't really taken off in Kerry at that stage. The Dublin Guards hadn't arrived, but the anti-treaty forces were in control in Listowel. Mm-hmm. And he was possibly the first person that was killed in the Civil War in Kerry, Edward Sheehy. The anti-treaty forces, they gave the guns for the Guard of Honour to the pro-treaty people. They had a truce that day, and both of them marched behind the coffin.
Fantastic. Vincent, while North Kerry Camera was being prepared, was being printed by the rental leader in Naas, Brian McMahon gave you advice on his mighty walk around Listowel Town Square one night.
Yeah. Brian knew that I was quite excited about the forthcoming publication. And every night I'd meet him, he'd say, any news? And I would bring him up to date. And he said, one night he called me aside and he said, you know, Vincent, he said, when the book is ready, when you have the book in your hand, if there is a mistake in it, he said, it will hop out and hit you between the two eyes. And he also said another thing I never forgot. Publishing a book is possibly the nearest to a pregnancy that a man can achieve. A picture that was taken of the then Church of Ireland School, which was at the corner of the square between the Bridge Road and the Catholic Church. At one stage, I got the roll books of the school. One of the pupils that was in the school in the early 1900s was a lady called Florence Nightingale. Now, one night, I used to love to try to catch Brian McMahon in something. And one night I was walking around the square with him and I said, when did Florence Nightingale go to school in the store? And he looked at me and he said, she never went to school in the store. I said, she did. He said, what are you talking about? There was no school in the store when Florence Nightingale was in her youth. No. I said, she was. She was a pupil in the school, in the store. And actually, her father had a bicycle repair shop in Church Street. He sat there laughing. He said, where did you get that information? I said, it was another Florence Nightingale.
There's an interesting photograph here on the Bridge Road in Listowel, and it shows the old Carnegie Library. I suppose over the years there was a discussion going on in the town of who actually burned it. In a recent documentary we did on the War of Independence in North Kerry, we discovered actually it was the local IRA company that burned it, and that was written down. We found the source where it was written down, because they didn't want it being used as a blockhouse for the British Army.
Vincent, have you a very accommodating bank manager? I mean, producing a book, the research, the travel, the writing, the editing, printing, the launch of it is very costly.
The modus operandi that I adopted from the very start was, first of all, to defray costs, which is the main thing, and you went to the public. Mm-hmm. Now, over the years, I had a good lot of people in the store who was very interested in preserving books, and I had no bother getting money from them, and so on and so forth. In another book that I'd done in Newcastle West and Limerick, Stumptious, I was the collector in general, if you like. Mm-hmm. And Tom Donovan said to me, I'll give you addresses and you go away and collect. Equally so, John Cusson in Newcastle West. I went away and I spoke to the people and I get the finance.
Karen, you have a couple of verses of a song.
So I'm going to sing The Hills Around Listowel, written by Gary McMahon. And it's a nostalgic account of his youth in growing up in Listowel.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an old man now, my head is grey, and my bones are brittle too. Come sit yourself down there a while, and a tale I'll tell to you of the fine young man that once I was in the days so long ago. When I picked the wild blackberries in the hills around Listowel, I fished for sea trout in my lovely Silver River field, and from Foley's orchard I confess sweet apples I did steal. I felt pinch of thorn on an autumn morn from the Smirla to Mount Cole, when I picked the wild blackberries in the hills around Listowel.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's The Mad Monk in Killarney. Serving the finest seafood in a cosy modern atmosphere. Book your special experience today at seafoodbar.ie.
Sing you a ballad and beauty extol, as I found it long ago in the town of Listowel.
Curiosity and commitment of Vincent Carmody to conceive and create his 9 books. Today's programme was recorded on January the 8th. For future programmes, your story on Vincent, his books and their special places. Text 083 300 3300 or phone 066 712 3666. His third book, Snapshots of an Irish Market Town, which appeared in 2012. We're still in historic Drummond House. We're now joined by local historian, Kerry's Eye columnist, Tom Dillon. Snapshots of an Irish Market Town all began in the early years of the 1990s.
I was walking down Truss Street, the original house of Polly and Dolly Stacks. It was being cleaned out, and there was a skip outside the door, and naturally I'd be drawn to skips. So I went over, and there was a load of books. I picked out a few ledgers, and one ledger was in particular belonged to the old railway that was in Listowel, the Great Southern Western Railway. And inside it, there were a few letterheads. One in particular, it was Kirby's of the Square. And I was looking at it, and I said, Jesus, I said, that would be a lovely way now to portray history. And I put it at the back of my head.
So there wasn't another example? It wasn't one that you had seen somewhere else, somebody else do something similar?
I don't think anyone ever had done anything like this before. Sometime later, I went back to see Donovan Hadley, who was a patient at that time in the district hospital. And Drummond House was closed up at this stage. He had closed up and he had gone to live at the house of his housekeeper in Ballyhadoig again. During our conversation, Hadley said to me, Vincent, are you working at anything? And to be professional, I said, I actually am, Donovan. I'm working on a book I hope to do of billheads. But I said, I don't have too many of them. Oh, he said, there's a load of them above in Drummond House. I said, I'd love to see them. Well, you could have them, he said. But he said, I always remember, he said, the next time Kate comes up, that's the housekeeper, if I think of it, I'll tell her to get them for you. So I said, that's fine, Hadley, Donovan. And before I left, I said, are you sure I can have them now? He said, nobody else will get them. So I left the hospital and went straight out to Kit. And I said, Donovan told me to go up and get the billheads. He wanted me to have them. So she didn't have the key. Her son had the key, Pop Guerin. And the next day I went up, I collected Pop. We had 2 flash lamps and plastic bags. And I got 8 plastic bags full of letterheads.
It was the colour that impressed you most in that Patrick Kirby billhead.
It's a very, very vivid red, yellow and white.
Tom, producing a book of billheads was unique, wasn't it? I mean, Would you ever have thought of something like that?
No, and I think that's where really we should appreciate Vincent. The stuff that's recorded on the billheads is just amazing, like the price of cigarettes. I was looking at them there last night, Woodbines and Gold Flake, I think were the other ones, those bottles of whiskey, all these different things, like how to shoe a horse.
It was from the Fords belonging to Ned Wilmot. And he was looking for somebody. Now, Neil Wilmot was the father of Seamus Wilmot, who afterwards became Registrar of the National University of Ireland. And to look at the bill head and to look at the writing in it, it was actually like Pudsey Ryan writing. There was no punctuation, no nothing. It was very simple, a very simple hand by... who I have learned since was a very smart man.
There's obviously huge pride the businesses had in themselves, like, you know, at that time. And Listowel is famous for the its shop fronts. And I don't think there's not too many other towns around the region that have such decorative shop fronts. But it didn't stop in their shop fronts. It went to their billheads as well, that they expressed their pride and that in their businesses.
You mentioned various ones there a minute ago. Is there one that particularly stands out for you?
There is one. There's one there actually in the square. It just shows a fair day in the square. You know, it's like a different world, really. Like when you look into look at it, it's kind of taken from maybe in front of Christie's, the Whale Bar, looking back towards Carroll's across that side of the square. And the square is absolutely full of cattle. Mm-hmm. And there's farmers going around, people talking. You can see them doing deals, checking out the cattle, even the breeds of cattle and everything. And it's like something that you go down to the square today and it's full of cars. Mm-hmm. And it just shows like the evolution of a town. And I suppose that's the value of this. And maybe that photograph sums up as well the stall as a market town.
I suppose the other thing I should have said, of course, the book does have a great number of photographs, as well as these writing pieces by the various literary luminaries of Listowel. So there's much more than billheads in it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, photographs as well. And I suppose the interesting thing as well, when you look at it, a lot of these old photographs of Listowel, like the Lawrence collection, they're in some of them are in this book. The town, it looks like it never changed, yet it was always changing. And you can see all these slight differences, you know, and I suppose that's the town that we love today, like that we can see. And Vincent's knowledge as well of a lot of the businesses in this and where they came from is just phenomenal as well.
Indeed. Vincent, you went around from street to street and you have the billheads divided into different streets and the photographs. That's the other thing that you do throughout all of the 9 books, that there are generally extensive captions giving you the context, giving you the story, giving you the background. It's not just a photograph on its own.
Yeah, with every photograph and with every billhead, there's 1,000 photographs. Mm-hmm. And another 1,000 stories. If you look at a photograph, you look at a person standing outside the door. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of history inside the door as well.
If Vincent had come to you and said to you, look, I was thinking of producing a book of billheads, what would you have advised him?
Maybe my take on history is different to a lot of people because I'm very interested in social history. So I would say straight away, you're fantastic. Yeah. I would have encouraged him, but whether it would sail and hit his pocket is the other problem, you see. So that would be the other issue.
On page 202, there is a lovely photograph of an inn in Listowel. I think Father Caden O'Shea went to great trouble or great lengths, and he actually went through the photograph. The painting, actually, and I think it finished up in the library in Listowel. And there's a whole lot of information. And on page 202, it gives all the information that was gleaned on that photograph.
There was a couple of documents in relation to Drummond House, actually, that I thought was very interesting. Mm-hmm. And one of them was about an agreement by a man and woman called John Kirby and Bridget Kirby. And they were being employed to live in the Gate Lodge here in Drummond House. And I thought, that's fantastic, very interesting. And something I actually wrote about as well myself at one stage, because I think so much of the big house history focuses on the big house itself and the family that lived in it. But I forget about the people who worked in it and the people who lived in the little lodges. So it kind of outlines as well about how they had to keep the Gate Lodge in good order and... to sweep the Avenue Drive as well, and they had to look after the gates as well.
Karen is going to sing us the Valley of Knockanuir. The whole of North Kerry, as Fergal Keane showed in his book, was a very upset area. I mean, and great houses were a centre of a lot of that.
The Raymonds here gave refuge to the local IRA, the houses out in the yard, and one of them worked with Jim Raymond in his solicitor's practice in William Street.
Did that save the house?
Yeah, I presumably so, yeah, because there was no kind of big land agitation here around Drummond. They were kind of more, the people who lived in this house were employed as solicitors.
Karen, the Valley of Knockanore.
You may sing and speak about Easter week, or the heroes of 98, of the Fenian men who roam the glen in victory or defeat. Their names are placed on history's page, their memory will endure. Not a song was sung for our darling sons in the Valley of Knockanure. There was Welsh and Lions and Dalton boys, they were young and in their pride. In every house, in every town, they were always side by side. The Republic bold they did uphold, though outlawed on the moor. And side by side they bravely died in the Valley of Knockanure.
Hey.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across the county. Serving the freshest seafood to Kerry families since 1963.
Sing you a ballad and beauty extol, as I found it long ago in the town of Listowel.
On Vincent Carmody's 9 books and special places that resonate with these books, we're now in the Shanachie Centre, the wonderful Writers' Museum beside the castle. In fact, we're in the Writers' Week offices. The books that we're going to talk about here, book number 4, Newcastle West Snapshots, published in 2017, co-edited with John Cusson, Sean Kelly and Pat O'Connor, billheads and photos from all of the streets of Newcastle West. And we were to be joined by John, but he's a bit under the weather this morning, so he's not with us. As well, book 6, Limerick Snapshots of the Treaty City and County, published in 2021, edited by Tom Donovan and Vincent Carmody. Tom has been with us, of course, since early morning, and he's been the backup of Vincent for over all the years. The Limerick book divides into different businesses with photos and billheads. It's a slightly different format to the Newcastle West book. Vincent, you didn't attempt to produce photo books of Newcastle West and Limerick City on your own.
Back around 1914, I was contacted by John Cusson, and John told me that he had 2 or 3 signed copies of Snapshots of an Irish Market Town, mm-hmm. and he would love to do a copycat version of Newcastle. So he asked me, would I do it for him? And I said, Jesus, John, I said, I've only been in Newcastle West twice. I've passed through it, but I've never been only there twice. No, he said, we want you to guide us through how you done your own book. So I said, I'd be perfectly willing to do that. So every Wednesday for 2 years, you availed of the free bus service, and my wife and myself used to travel down, my wife going on further to Limerick to do a bit of shopping, and I'd stop off in Newcastle West, where I'd go over to John Cusson's office and upstairs to his library.
He explained to you, as a solicitor and historian, and also been a son of a solicitor and well-known Limerick historian, Bertie Cusson, that their family law firm had a large number of similar billheads, letterheads. Tom, researching the Limerick book.
One nugget was on the mode of transport used. We found that a billhead, that the mode of transport to Listowel, to Drummond House, was down the River Shannon to Tarbert, and then carried by hackney car. Another thing we found, and this is universal all over Ireland, was payment. Like in Drummond House, they cut a note in half and sent it on with the order. And then when they got the delivery, they sent the second half of the note to avoid theft in the post office. There's no coins because it's too heavy. They put in stamps instead of coins.
Vincent, Newcastle West.
Also, the other two people were Sean Kelly. Sean Kelly was a retired national school teacher, and Sean had a wonderful collection of old photographs of Newcastle. Now, it couldn't have been done without Sean's input in photographs. And we also had another man on board called Pat O'Connor. Now, Pat is a geographer, and Pat has done a book on Newcastle West himself, a book on the town plans. He lectured in UL. One particular photograph that he came up with was a band playing in one of the halls in Newcastle, and it was lovely afterwards because I was able to include it in a later book, because the band was from Newcastle, but I was able to put it in because they were playing in the Astor in the Stall at the races at a later time.
Two for the price of one. Tom, were there Kerry trade connections with Limerick?
Yeah, it was. Drummond House did most of their orders from Limerick. And they bought local where they could, but for larger purchases, you know, for the seed warehouses and that. There was also a connection, John Revington. He founded the famous Brown Thomas store. It was Todd's at the time in Limerick.
And of course, Revington's shop in Tralee.
The same. And a brother of his went to Tralee and founded a Revington shop in Tralee.
Todd's and Brown Thomas's and Revington's in Tralee. And as well, you told me about a Joseph N. Revington established the extensive Ballymullen Tweed Mills in Tralee. Do you know anything about them?
I will when we do the Tralee book.
So is that going to be number 10?
Yeah, I think so.
They were the same Revingtons as in Tralee. Yeah. The same family. Yeah. They had the Ballymullen mill.
A friend of mine, the late Joe Revington, had traced that, and his brother Gordon knows that's about it as well. Yeah,
that's right. Gordon is an interesting writer himself and historian. And I think you're hauling him in for the Tralee book, are you?
Yeah, well, that's the plan, yeah.
So that's committing him on air.
I haven't told my wife yet.
So are you going to reverse it then? Are you going to travel to Tralee by bus every Wednesday?
Yeah, well, I'm just free travelling as well. So,
The man who was very enthusiastic about the Newcastle West book was the former director of the National Museum, Pat Wallace.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Pat Wallace launched the book for us, and he was enthralled. And he had great stories on the night.
Do you have a favourite photograph yourself in the Newcastle West book?
There's one of Michael Collins in the square in reviewing Free State troops.
There are what appear to be old glass plate negative images used to illustrate the book. Where were they sourced? Where did they come from?
A friend of mine, Sean Curtin, who does a series of pictorial books in Limerick, Stroll Down Memory Lane, contacted me. Totally. I helped him edit the book. He sent me his proof. And I was telling him about the project for Limerick. And he said, actually, I have a collection which I borrowed from Gary McMahon, his father Joe, who I knew, had collected these glass plate negatives. And sorry, they were the billheads. He collected all these billheads. And they were predated any billheads we had. And so that was the first book. We got a large collection of early 19th century billheads, which really enhanced the book. And then the glass plate negatives. Another man contacted me and said, by the way, Tipperary Archives have glass plate negatives. So we contacted Mary Darmody. She said, we have a lot of Limerick ones and North Kerry, which we don't know where they are. So we got them, and Vincent identified a lot of the North Kerry ones, which we were delighted with. He could tell them where they were. She kindly gave us permission to publish them.
The originals of those are all back in Tipperary.
Tipperary Studies.
Tom, getting J.P. McManus to write the introduction to the Limerick book was a stroke of genius.
I can take no credit for that. Vincent.
Oh, so he did that as well.
Yeah. But he was delighted to do it. He says he doesn't support books, really, but I was saying to Jimmy Dean earlier, I worked for Revenue in my past life. If Vincent had my job and I was a postman, the national debt would be wiped out. Because Vincent came into Newcastle West and Limerick and got sponsors to cover the cost of the book, towards the cost of the book, to people he never met. One woman said to me, he was in now, she said, and had a cheque for €250. I said to myself, what have I done?
What's the approach, Jimmy? I mean, how do you do this? You can go into a total stranger in a strange place and come out with a cheque for €250.
Listen, if you have a good story, people will support you. If you be nice to people, well, I'm always a great believer in the fact that telling people your name will go on the book, the name will be there as long as the book survives. It's nice to have your name in association with the book.
Yeah. We're going to a break and the 10 o'clock news. And after the news, we'll be back talking about four further books, the four last of the nine, and we'll visit their special places. And now to sing us out with the town of Listowel.
The Town of Listowel, written by Brian McMahon. Oh, Puck may be famous and Galway be grand, and the praise of Tramore echo down through the land. But I'll sing you a ballad and beauty extol, as I found it long ago in the town of Listowel. Tooraloo, tooralay, as I found it long ago in the town of Listowel. I've been to Bundoran, I've rambled to Bray, I've footed it to Bantry with its beautiful bay. But I'd barter their charums, I would, pon my soul, for the week of the races in lovely Listowel. Tooraloo, tooralay, for the week of the races in lovely Listowel. They came from Castle Island, they came from Tralee, and a good looking gentleman came from Fiji. Oh. With a Dutchman, a German, a Swede and a Pole. Sure 'twas more like Geneva than lovely Listowel. Tooraloo, tooralay, sure 'twas more like Geneva than lovely Listowel. There were bookies and bagmen and bankers and all. Biddy Mulligan was there with a green coloured shawl, and a cute little boy pitching pence in a bowl took me down for a crown in the town of Listowel. Tooraloo, tooralay, took me down for a crown in the town of Listowel. Beyond on the course there was silk flashing past, the unfortunate nag that I backed he was last. When he ran the wrong way, sure I lost my control, and I prayed for the trainer and lovely Listowel. Tooraloo, tooralay, and I prayed for the trainer and lovely Listowel. Oh, night time, how are you? The night sure 'twas day, and the stars in the sky, they look down in dismay, and they says to the moon then in accents so droll, you're done for, the sun shines tonight in Listowel. Tooraloo, tooralay, you're done for, the sun shines tonight in Listowel. My rhyming is over, God bless those who heard, for I'll take to the roads and go off like the bird. And before I depart, well, you all must pay toll. So three cheers for the races and lovely Listowel.
Hey! Fantastic.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by the new family fish box at Quinlan's Seafood Bars. Packed with golden fish goujons, fresh squid, delicious prawns and tasty homemade chips. Order yours to take away today.
Sing you a ballad and beauty extol, as I found it long ago in the town of Listowel.
Welcome back. Dave Vincent Carmody's 9 books over the past 40 years. Visiting special places Vincent associates with the books. The programme was recorded on January the 8th. For future programmes, your story on Vincent, his books and their special places. Write Frank Lewis, Gillon, Mangerton Road, Muckross, Killarney. Email franklewismangerton@gmail.com. Text 083 300 3300 or phone 066 712 3666. In the next hour, guided by Vincent and Tom O'Donovan and the songs of Karen Trench, in 24 Upper William Street, Cathy Buckley's home, Maura Logue tells of book number 7, Cathy Whitehouse, which was published in 2023. An update of book 2, you published in 1989, the book 8, North Kerry Camera Revisited, published in 2024. We're joined there by publican, raconteur, sometimes newspaper columnist Billy Keane. Your most recent publication, book number 9, Bail, My Own Place by Johnny Dalton, published this past year in 2025, joined by Johnny Dalton's nephew, John Dalton, and Tom Donovan will have something to say there as well. To begin, we're in the offices of what used to be the offices of solicitor Louis O'Connell, and now Bailey's at 32 The Square, Listowel. At one time, The room we're in was a print shop. We're joined by Owen McMahon to hear about Book 5, Listowel, A Printer's Legacy, published in 2018, the story of Listowel town printer Bob Cuthbertson. Of Scottish origin and non-Catholic, Bob Cuthbertson and his family were fervent, strong Irish nationalists. Vincent, on one occasion, they were asked to print a pamphlet with a word of warning to a cruel landlord on his treatment of some tenants.
The local Republican faction came to him. They wanted him to print some pamphlets about retaliation that they would have to some landlord that was stepping out of line. He did so. The following couple of days he was at church receiving communion, and he was next door to this landlord. And the landlord turned around. He said, "Printer, you're a traitor." The Cuthbertson said, "Why so?" He said, "Printer, when I got the warning, the print was still wet."
In another act of rightness, Cuthbertson resigned from the church vestry when he had a difference with an evil land agent, George Sands.
George Sands was a hated member of the Protestant community here, even though even his own people disowned him. They had a meeting below in the Protestant church, the vestry meeting. Cuthbertson and a number more walked out because he was after being appointed as a member of the vestry.
Owen,
because of the Protestant persuasion, we know we associate that with the soup. Now, my father wanted to show him Irish culture, so he said to Bob, "Bob, we'll go to a Munster final in Killarney." And Bob says, "Yes, Brian, we'll go on one condition, that we have lunch in Killarney before the match." Now, at that time, you're talking about late 40s or early 50s, there was only two hotels in Killarney, the International and the Great Southern. My father had a contact because his first cousin was the housekeeper in the International, so he went in to the International, and 'twas mobbed. But he caught the eye of a little girl from Knocknagoshal, and she said, "There's a table, sit over there, the three of you, and I'll be with you in a minute." 20 minutes later, they were still waiting. So she came over and she said, "We're in an awful rush today. Would you mind if you skip the soup?" And Bob looked at her down through over the glasses. He said, "My dear girl, I'll tell you what, we'll skip the soup, we'll skip the roast beef, we'll skip the sherry trifle. Would you ever bring us a glass of water and an Aspro, and we'll call it quits." That was his trip to Killarney for the Munster final.
Vincent, is there a story in Listowel, A Printer's Legacy, that stands out for you?
A little photograph at the very start of the introduction to the Cuthbertson family of the original Robert Irvine Cuthbertson. It's the only photograph in existence.
Yeah.
And actually, I traced a Cuthbertson family in Connecticut in America who would be great-grandchildren of the original.
Yeah.
And that man, Philip Cuthbertson, went to great lengths. He actually flew down to his father's residence from Connecticut to get the photograph, and I had it within a week.
Owen, your writer father, Brian McMahon, had a long-standing friendship, as you said, with the younger Cuthbertson brother, Bob. He spent many hours in the print shop.
My father composed a little ditty. "Go forth in haste with print and paste, proclaim to all creation that men are wise who advertise in every generation." And you know the old story about the man, the businessman who doesn't advertise. He has been compared to a man who winks at a good-looking girl in the dark. He knows what he's doing, but nobody else does.
Owen, I mean, the big association with the printing shop, of course, and your father, was that your father actually used to write ballads in the shop while waiting.
After the bills for the fares were printed off, the offcut at the bottom, paper was left, and rather throw it out, he'd say to young McMahon, "Write a ballad to fit into that." And he did compose the ballads. He composed The Valley of Knockanore. And indeed, I was listening to your programme recently about Sneem and the hub in Sneem. And interspersed through it, you had the song of Steve Casey from Sneem. My father wrote that in the late 30s or early 40s, and it was printed. And it had Cuthbertson Machine Printer Limited. That's what was down on the ballad sheets. And the ballad sheets were always in different colours, Frank. There was green, red, yellow. And that was because the travelling people would come in and they couldn't read. But they knew that the green ones at the fairs were very popular. That was the Valley of Knockanore. And they'd say 20 of the green ones, sir. You know what I mean?
And these were for sale for a penny.
Oh, yes. He did it for the love of it. And everything like that. He never got copyright of any of these things. And these ballads were sung by people who attributed their own names to him afterwards. I saw recently where Kerry Candlelight was composed by somebody. The Ballad of Christy Ring, some fellow put his name to it, and my father had written it 50 years ago.
Vincent, the middle of the 1950s, Bob's business had tapered off.
As nice as Bob was, he had one fault. He loved to drink. And I think the drink got the better of him in the end.
Yeah.
Now, the first couple, St. Robert Irvine, he went to the National School as soon as he came to the store, and he asked the master at the time, Master O'Neill, pick out a boy who would be a good apprentice. And he picked out John Nolan. And the Nolan family continued in the various generations. Last of the Nolans to work with Bob Cuthbertson was Mikey Nolan. But Mikey Nolan's nephew, Thomas Grogan, served his time under Bob Cuthbertson. And back in the 1950s, when Maloney's printing started, Maloney's printing, not in opposition to Bob, but people were not getting what they wanted off Bob because of the drink. And they started up a printing works, and Thomas Grogan went and started the printing works, and he was joined afterwards by P.J. Maher. And P.J. Maher and himself, when Maloney ceased, mid-50s, they decided to go out on their own, and this was the first office that they had, the Listowel Printing Works.
Owen, not in the book, but there I found a ballad which was printed by Cuthbertson, and I don't think was ever heard, called De Valera on the Air.
Go on.
Written by my father to commemorate the broadcast on Wednesday the 15th of May 1944, yeah, in reply to Eamon De Valera's speech to Churchill. And it goes, "Oh, then tell me why the tumult has been stilled in Martin Street, why the roads and lanes are empty of the din of people's feet. There is silence, then the answer comes in accents true and rare. 'Tis the voice of freedom ringing out with Dev across the air." I don't think it ever saw the light of day, because all I have, it was printed, but it was first proof is all I think, but I never heard it recited. And he goes on to say to Churchill, "You have blasted, Mr. Churchill, how your country stood alone through a year or two of darkness when your friends were overthrown. But through seven bitter centuries, the Irish rose to dare. Thus the voice of freedom ringing out with Dev across the air." There's a Republican for you.
Vincent, you'd been collecting original Cuthbertson's posters for many years.
Yeah, I've been very lucky. I get them here, there and everywhere. As Owen mentioned previously, it was before the era of the internet. If you wanted to sell something, you got something printed. Okay. So a lot of these were left in various houses and people gave them to me. I got several from Father Kieran O'Shea. I have the only original size poster that was printed by the Store Printing Works. When I was doing the book, I went into the library, and Michael Lynch was the archivist at the time in the county library, and he actually, I found some posters inside there that were relevant as well. The particular ballads that I printed, that I published in the Printer's Legacy, that I got from Brian McMahon, the ones he wrote. At one stage, my brother was very ill in Sydney, in Australia. And he spoke to me on the phone one day and he said, "Vincent, are the ballads available now?" And they were not. So I went to Brian and I explained to Brian, "I look after you," he said. And he gave me a sheaf of ballads and he signed them himself. And they're all signed, they're signed Best Thomas, Brian McMahon.
Karen, what are we going to sing?
So my Silver River feel is here on in the Printer's Legacy from a ballad sheet of the time.
Great.
"My heart tonight is lonely for my sire land, though many miles of ocean lie between. My heart tonight is home again in Ireland, with many a smiling Buachal and Colleen. Ah, woe that in that green isle o'er the billows, one hour of youth this roving lad could steal. I'd stand again entranced beside the willows, upon thy banks my Silver River feel. I've had success, or so the world reckons. I've everything I've wished for at my hand. Yet o'er the seas an Irish river beckons, and how can I deny its clear command? For what a riches when the heart is aching, and what is wealth when all my senses reel? To stand again and watch the red dawn breaking along thy banks, my silver river field.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars, located across Kerry. Enjoy a simple, healthy and easy dinner solution with Quinlan's fresh, ready-made seafood meals. Available in store.
Sing you a ballad and beauty extol, as I found it long ago in the town of Listowel.
Vincent Carmody's 9 books and their special places. We're now at Cathy Buckley's house on 29 Upper William Street to talk about book number 7, Cathy Whitehouse, which was published in 2023. Here we're joined by Maureen Logue, the Artistic Director of St John's Theatre and Arts Centre. Vincent, one day a young Brian McMahon asked his mother why Cathy Buckley was called Cathy Whitehouse.
Mrs. McMahon said, "Brian, because she works in the most important house in America, the White House in Washington." One day I heard them talking. My mother asked, "Cathy, did you ever see a crisis when you were in the White House?" Cathy looked and she said, "Joni, if my sandwiches ever came back from the Oval Office to Eton, I knew there was a world crisis."
I see in recent weeks the Butler Arms Hotel in Waterville has changed hands again. Maura, the likelihood of Cathy Buckley working in the Butler Arms Hotel from 1900 to 1906 and meeting J.P. Morgan there and being brought by him to America.
And one evening, Cathy was preparing a meal for an American guest who, having enjoyed the particular meal, asked to meet the cook. And so he would compliment her in person. And that's the pivotal change. Yeah. The guest was none other than J.P. Morgan, the American banker. And he offered her a job as an assistant cook at Morgan's Manhattan residence. However, I love this part, before Cathy would accept the job, she explained that she would first have to seek permission from her father. Then, following an interchange of letters between Morgan and Lar Buckley, Cathy's acceptance of his offer of the position came, but not before Morgan would guarantee a speedy return to Ireland and William Street if Cathy was unhappy or unable to settle in her new location.
Fantastic.
My unusual. Father took me into Tralee train station. He said, "Goodbye, off you go, girl."
Vincent, in your young days, she was just Cathy Buckley. Your cousin Eileen's aunt. Eileen died suddenly at her Portmarnock home in April 2007, the time you retired from the post office after 38 years. Eileen and you were always close, you say, having both your birthdays on November the 16th. Yes. The year after Eileen's death, you would travel once a month up for the overnight visit to Eileen's husband, Brian. One evening, Brian went to his study and returned with a very large envelope, which he handed to you.
Inside the envelope was all Cathy's memorabilia that his wife Eileen had inherited. And he just put it back in and he said, "Vincent, this is yours. Make use of it."
There's a huge amount of stuff in it, though. I mean, the recipes that are there, the menus, the outlines. She had an enormous amount of stuff that she had kept from the White House years.
I remember when she came back from America, I'd have been 9 years of age, 1953. My dad drove Paddy, who lived in this house, down to Cove to get his sister Cathy, who was coming home from America. And she brought these two enormous trunks back with her. No wonder she was able to bring back stuff.
Maura.
When Cathy was coming home to Ireland in 1953, her occupation was listed as dietitian. Oh. Now, we would have said dietitian was a kind of a modern word, but no, it was on Cathy's passport.
In 2022, you started working on the book Cathy Whitehouse. You say, I made 2 search trips to America. Someone suggested you might check in the library if they had any books by American food journalist and historian, author of 4 books on women and food, Laura Shapiro. Vincent,
They had one particular book, and the name of it was What She Ate. Laura Shapiro's name meant nothing to me, neither did the books, but I took the book home. It was very interesting. I looked up her name subsequently. Her email was on Google. Yeah. So I emailed her, and I told her what I had, because she was a very, very eminent culinary historian. And she was very excited when she returned an email. She told me that she'd never heard of Cathy Buckley, and she was amazed. And she was very interested in... I had sent her a few pieces, a few samples, yeah. And she said, I'd love to see more of it. I saw something that maybe she could be of use to me. So I decided to take a trip to New York. And I stayed with my friend Robert Corden. She invited us up to the house, beautiful apartment, lives there with her husband, Jack. She treated us like royalty. And I opened what I had. Each piece I was showing her, I could sense that she was getting more excited. And eventually we came to the end and put everything away. And I said, no, the big thing, Laura, is will you write the books forward?
Yeah.
And she said, Vincent, I would be honoured.
I dropped a note to Laura Shapiro the other day to ask for a piece about Cathy Buckley. She says, Cathy Buckley made an extraordinary contribution to the most famous kitchen in America, but we wouldn't have known a thing about her if it weren't for Vincent Carmody. His work as an archivist and researcher brings us so close to Cathy's cooking, it's as if we're sitting at the table. With this book, she finally has the place she deserves in Irish and American culinary history. Maura.
Cathy cooking for crowds. In election year, President Hoover was always hungry. They couldn't understand it, but he was saying, you see, I was always hungry then because he was an orphan boy and a younger man growing up. Ava Long, who was the head cook in it, one morning and went downtown shopping at 11 with the understanding that there would only be four extra persons for luncheon. I came back home at 12. A message came from the executive wing to say that there would be 40 for luncheon. I did what you would have to do is if your husband and son turned up a few minutes before mealtime with hearty friends going into the kitchen, I went to the icebox, assembled the leftovers and ordered them ground up and made into croquettes. Cathy, the head cook for the past 7 years, is a genius. I have no idea what she did with the remnants of the baked ham, sausage and lamb, but the result was a golden brown concoction decked out with mushroom sauce, chopped parsley, flanked with a snowdrift of rice. It simply melted in your mouth. A distinguished foreign guest present at the day asked for the recipe, and Catherine and I went into a huddle and they tried to remember what was in the icebox and just christened it the White House Supreme. So she was well able to cope, like all women, when the crowds come in.
Maura, very finally, how did Mrs. Roosevelt, the wife of one of Cathy's presidents, how did she cope with racism?
Roosevelt was elected and there was to be a big change then. So Mrs. Roosevelt came in and she wanted her own people to be looking after her. So unfortunately, Cathy and all the staff in the White House were to be let go. Cathy wrote her a big long letter and could she not stay in that? And is it because I'm not coloured? So, dear Miss Buckley, Mr. Farley has given me your letter and I grieve very much that I have to let any people go who are now in the White House. But unfortunately, the government expenditure have to be curtailed at every hand, and the same things which have been done in the departments will have to be done in the White House. I have had my own servants for many years. They happen to be coloured because I had coloured servants when I was in Washington. I have kept them on with the same one or their friends ever since. But the question of them being white or coloured had nothing whatsoever to do with the dismissal.
Very finally, Vincent, on this particular one, you have two mementos. You have a key and you have a piece of wood.
My cousin Eileen Buckley died. A month later, we were having the Munster Mass. And during the function, Brian Paul, the youngest son of Eileen's, stood up to make a few say a few words. And he brought out this envelope or a bag. Yeah. And out of it, he took this key. And he said, we want you to have this. And this was the key that Calvin Coolidge got when he was made free man of Fort Worth.
You also got a piece of wood.
When Herbert Hoover was doing up the White House in the 1930s, he decided to bring in a lot of new wood. And a lot of the old wood was being discarded. And Mrs. Hoover was had a very inventive mind. She decided to make little pieces of memorabilia. And among the pieces of memorabilia she made was a pen holder. They gave them out to their friends.
Carol is going to sing a song.
This song is coming out of the book that Tom Donovan and myself recently published called Bail My Own Place. The man who wrote a memoir, Johnny Dalton, remembered having been told back in the early 30s, there was a gentleman and two women came down the road to where he lives.
Yeah.
And this man turned out to be somebody who had left Bail in the 1870s with his mother and brother, and he went to San Francisco. His name was Thomas O'Connor, and Thomas O'Connor became a journalist, and he wrote this poem in 1912 when he was over in San Francisco, and it was the 15th of August, and he remembered the 15th of August when he was young.
In California's golden shores, all decked with shady bowers, Dame Nature fills the landscape fair with sunshine, fruit and flowers, and smiling summer lingers long where sits in queenly state fair San Francisco, proud and grand beside the Golden Gate. Within these shores in peace I've lived for many, many years. Yet memories of other days oft to my eyes bring tears. The days I spent in boyhood's youth when I trod the valley o'er and plucked the wild flowers from the glens near Ballybunion shore.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across Kerry. Take the fear out of fish and chat to our fishmongers about how to add delicious, easy to cook seafood into your menu. Oven and air fryer ready meals available.
Ballad and beauty extol, as I found it long ago in the town of Listowel.
The vision, courage and commitment of Vincent Carmody to conceive and create his 9 books. Today's programme was recorded on January the 8th for future programmes. Your story on Vincent, his books and their special places. Right, Frank Lewis, Gillon, Mangerton Road, Muckross, Killarney. Text 083-300-3300, 4066-712-3666. Book number 8, North Kerry Camera Revisited, published in 2024. An update on book 2, you published in 1989. We're joined by publican, raconteur and newspaper columnist Billy Keane. Long after North Kerry Camera had been sold out, you used to get continuing inquiries from all over to buy a copy. Vincent?
North Kerry Camera Revisited, I would say, was like an unplanned pregnancy. I had always hoped for it, but I never got around to it. But however, I was in America launching Kathy Buckley Whitehouse, and I was in Chicago with my son, and I got news that a great friend, one of my best friends, Dr. Michael O'Sullivan, was very sick in Rochester, Minnesota. So without haste, we headed up there, Kevin and myself, to see him. We spent 2 nights with him, and I knew when I was leaving I'd never see him again. So when I got back in, this was in 2024, I decided, is there any way I could have him remembered here in Listowel?
Yeah.
Now, I wouldn't be talking about money or anything, because I wouldn't have much of it, but I said what I could do is I'll republish my North Kerry Camera and update it. So that gave me the impetus to do the new book. And I was delighted I got the opportunity. John Pierce at one stage came to me and he said, Vincent, you're in the money. And I said, for what, John? He said, your North Kerry Camera has been sold by De Burkes in Dublin for €350. I was astounded.
Yeah.
Now, primarily because, first of all, Brian McMahon had told me when I was bringing the book out, Vincent, put away two or three boxes of books because they will be valuable in time. Yeah. However, I didn't do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Billy, 9 books, it's incredible. And what's nice about it more than anything else is the books are getting more valuable by the day.
Indeed.
Now, I have an Alt Carry camera. Yeah, 350, but I let it go for 3,500 because it means that much to me.
Vincent, can I go back following that kind of feeling boastful? You contacted the booksellers and introduced yourself.
The book is in Dublin. When John Pearce had given me the information about the book being bought at, I rung the book up and I said to him, I was very proud, of course.
Yeah.
I actually put the book together, and he said to me, have you got any more?
Yeah.
And I said, only enough for my children. And I said, it's not worth 350. I said, I sold it for £13. He said, listen, my friend, if you want it, it's worth it. One other story at Kenny's in Galway, who were selling the original, and I saw they had a book for sale for €5. I couldn't believe my eyes. I ordered a copy immediately and I got it 2 days later. It cost me €7.
So did you sell it for 350?
Well, no. As Billy said, I want to wait till it arrives at 3,500.
Billy, the new edition, is there a story that stands out for you?
The one I liked the most, and I knew a bit about it already, was Tom Doodle.
It's a wonderful story.
So there was a pub called Curly O'Connor's in Church Street, no longer with us, unfortunately. And my dad and a few other reprehensibles decided to stir up a bit of a commotion, and they invented an election candidate called Tom Doodle.
Yeah.
And they were going to run him in the election. There was a lot of bitterness about politics that time in Kerry and everywhere. And what year was it, Vincent?
1951.
Too far away from the Civil War. You know, maybe 30 years back from the Civil War. A very hot election debate, yeah, and violence going on. So they decided to make fun of it all. Tom Doodle was brought by train into the store. He was made up with a bowler hat, and he was an actor. I was lucky enough to meet him not long before he died.
But he wasn't recognised by the people.
No, nobody. They were sworn to secrecy. The thing was that you wouldn't break the bond. The last one who knew who he was Sean O'Sullivan, Ned, Senator Ned's dad. He was the last one who knew. And several people asked him on his deathbed who Tom Doodle was, and he refused to tell. So the secret was carried to the grave. But we did find out because some of his family were in touch. A lovely man.
So are you going to tell us?
No. I'll carry it to my grave sometime. But they had a great day, a big march just right outside the door here. They marched down past Vincent's house from the railway station. Bands, thousands of people on the street. They met in the small square as opposed to the big square, which is right beside it. And isn't the square at all, the small square. So they all met there, and there were speeches, and of course my old fella was in flying far. He was in his element. And they had a fantastic election manifesto then that was brought out. Vote number one, Tom Doodle. Use your noodle. Vote for Doodle. Doodle on the ball. Next step, the doll will be won. And then their election manifesto, Vincent. Number one, to plough the rocks of Bond. Number two, to build a factory for shaving the hair from gooseberries. Three, to develop the periwinkle industry. And funnily enough, that was meant as a joke, but the periwinkle industry did develop afterwards, and people were picking in lonesome cold pools and mornings like this, picking periwinkles for Paris. And it became a huge thing, and they were nearly picked out now, I think, of periwinkles.
But Doodle didn't make it to the ballot paper.
No, he was never going to make it to the ballot paper. Just to give you an idea of some of the other strands to the manifesto, was to give free treatments for sick heads, which I do here occasionally, but I charge for it, and to salvage the skins of black puddings after the contents had been eaten. And they remembered it every year afterwards. There was a dinner, the Doodle dinner, and they all dressed up in bow ties and bowler hats.
Fantastic. Should be recreated.
I was thinking we might. Maybe after the book comes out, it might be the impetus to start it off all over again.
And I should have said at the beginning, we're in John B's, now Billy's pub here in the store. Vincent.
I think there's 8 new sections in the Knockery Camera Revisited from the first one. And 2 of those is the Great Houses. Now, the Great Houses...
The wonderful section.
Has never really been covered. I was lucky enough to know most of the houses. Yeah. It was a matter of going around and getting photographs of them and filling in the history. But Tom done a lot of the research for the Great Houses.
No better man. Billy, Vincent Carmody.
He's a postman, and the thing is that he covered all the Douar. He was there. He also covered the store. Vincent was known in every house in North Kerry, and he was kind of the housewife's choice. He'd stop for tea. He'd have a mug of cocoa or whatever was going. He used to have a couple of drinks at Christmas. Vincent is a very kind man. And what he used to do, and my dad uses in Letters of a Postman, Vincent used to drop cards into people who didn't have any cards to get. Maybe they could have a son or a daughter in America.
Yeah.
And they were largely forgotten about. So he was great. And he spent a bit of extra time with them. The fact that he's managed to get 9 books out is absolutely phenomenal.
Vincent, he's sitting quietly in the back there. Tom Donovan has been invaluable to you over the years.
Tom Donovan is wonderful. He's probably one of the best historians.
Is he the kind of your Boswell?
Better than Boswell.
Karen, you have something by John Beads you're going to sing for us.
I have many young men of 20.
Oh, great.
Many young men of 20 said goodbye on that long day, from break of dawn until the sun was high. Many young men of 20 said goodbye. They left the mountains and the glens, the lassies and the fine young men. I saw a tear in every girl and boy. Many young men of 20 said goodbye. Last night I held my darling in my arms. Farewell, my love. It breaks my heart to see you cry. Farewell, my love, for maybe I will die. Many young men of 20 said goodbye. My boy Jimmy sailed away on the big ship, went away. He sailed away and left me here to cry. Many young men of 20 said goodbye. Many young men of 20 said goodbye. And that long day, from break of dawn until the sun was high, many young men of 20 said goodbye. Many young men of 20 said goodbye.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across Kerry. Supplement your diet with a healthy and fresh dinner option. Fresh seafood from Quinlan's.
Ballad and beauty extol, as I found it long ago in the town of Listowel.
On Vincent Carmody's 9 books and the special places that resonate with those books, we're now at the, well, we were to be at the home of John Dalton, or maybe on Bale Strand in the Shannon Estuary. But you might remember on the 8th of January when we were recording, there were all sorts of warnings of snow and storm and very bad road conditions. So luckily John came in to join us, and we're at the back of the Listowel Arms Hotel. We're looking down over the River Feel and down over the racecourse, not quite where we intended to be. But however, here we're talking about book number 9, Bale, My Own Place, by Johnny Dalton, published just this past year in 2025. This is the history of an area of the Ballybunion parish as seen through the eyes of historian Johnny Dalton, 1909 to 1999. It's a memoir. However, Dalton is more interested in the area's history than of himself. Here, along with Vincent and John Dalton and Tom Donovan, and of course, Karen is here with us to sing us out with a very special song. Vincent.
Tom Donovan and myself got to know Johnny Dalton ever before we knew each other.
Yeah.
Now, back in the 1980s, Johnny had come in to me and he had given me his original manuscript that he had written his history.
This was his memoir.
His memoir, yeah. So I had read this and I thought it was fascinating. And I went out the following week and I said to Johnny, that should be published. And he said, not in my lifetime. In a strange way, Tom Donovan was told the same thing.
You were trying to publish it as well, Tom.
John's mother and my mother were both from Glen. They grew up together and they stayed friends. And I used to drive my mother back to meet Joan Dodd and Nicola Ann. While my mother and Joan caught up in local stories, I spoke to Johnny. And I remember he could recite passages out of Listowel in his vicinity, which we mentioned earlier by Gahan, without even taking the book off the shelf. He gave me a copy of his book, typed copy, and Vincent and I decided, look, we need to get this out there. We started doing footnotes then, and the footnotes grew into an appendix. They were taking over too much of the page, and it wouldn't look right. The triggers he had, I mean, one story, he said a teacher was drowned on Beale Strand, and he had the name of the teacher, Dorn. I went through the newspaper archives, and it was 1855, half a century before Johnny even came in. That's just one instance of, and he had stories of shipwrecks.
John, a nephew of Johnny.
The story that a lot of people might not know about a sail that was washed in the strand below our land. At that time, it was pre-famine times, so the body was brought up and buried in my lands going along the strand, and there was a bush sat there called the Sailor's Bush. And he was telling me years after, the old people would watch in the fine even to hear the waves breaking at the Sailor's Bush, so it was a good sign of weather coming. He said when the plane landed at Beale, the crowds came from everywhere. Like, it was like something coming out of space at that time in 1927. Yeah. And he said it was so busy, the guards had come down to supervise the traffic.
Vincent, Johnny was very inventive. He was very mechanical. His brother Jamesy, Johnny's father, they worked together. They'd have machinery. But one morning, there was a bad forecast. And they decided to get their hay up. And when they went out at the mowing bar or whatever it was, a part of the machine broke. Johnny, nothing else to do but took off the old piece, back to the house, got up on his bike and cycled to Limerick.
To Limerick?
He cycled to Limerick.
Yeah.
He had his breakfast with his sister in Talbot. He got his piece and came back to Beale, put on the piece, but under the wrong piece. So what did he do? Cycled back to Talbot again, had his dinner with his sister, and went back to Limerick, hitting Limerick about 10 to 6 before the hardware shop. We don't know what the conversation was between the man they gave him the wrong piece and Johnny. He came back to Beale, put on the new piece, finished his work at 4:30 in the morning.
Top Shannon side annual from 1956 to 1960.
The print was so good in the original, it could be transposed into the book. And those were accounts that, you know, every parish should have done. But luckily, Beale had those accounts of, you know, the Princess Zina, which John mentioned, stories about Beale Fair. It adds to the book, you know, having those. Because anybody under 50 wouldn't have heard of the Shannon side annual, probably, you know.
Yeah. John, over the years, were you aware that your uncle, Johnny Dalton, was writing a memoir?
I was aware. The memoirs were wrote in our own kitchen. And
right.
I suppose you would give great tribute to my mother that she allowed him the comforts every day to write the thing in anyone's kitchen table.
Yeah.
And that was, and not alone that, but Johnny was seen to be writing things for people as long as I remember. I think he was involved with the Irish folklore or something about Dublin.
Right. So the collection of...
He was writing stuff for them the whole time. So
there's probably a lot of his material then in the folklore collection in UCD.
It could be. Well, I wouldn't be aware of that.
Tom, did you go and look in the Folklore Commission to see if there was other material by Johnny Dalton?
It's online, yeah.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
How much stuff is there?
The Ballyhea faction fight, there's loads of stuff in that. Sometimes folklore is dismissed, but when you compare it to what's on the newspaper archive, a lot of it is very accurate, you know. Maybe the long date might be wrong with that. But I'd like to pay tribute to my namesake, Thomas Donovan of Beale, who was a great help to us, a man in his 90s.
He's a man that we were hoping to call to today,
but because
and
weather,
we certainly will call to him.
Yeah. He corrected us on a number of things. He could tell you stories about the Carmody woman who came from Clare, married into Beale, and died shortly after the second child was born. And he told us about the second child. We'd only record of one, but Thomas said no, there was two, and he died young. So, you know, little things like that.
9 books over the past 40 years. Are you hoping Vincent will give it a rest now?
I am, but like I said earlier, I have to be careful because my wife is listening.
Vincent, will I break the bad news to Tom? You're already planning the number 10.
Well-known writers often said, I won't talk about my new project. So at the moment, I'm singing dumb.
Johnny
was a man, lived a kind of quiet life. He enjoyed simple things in life. As far as sport was, he had a general interest and he attended the horse show regularly and races. But one thing we spot all our life, and it was always an open book to us, he kept a diary of every day. Yeah. And if you wanted to know what the weather was in the 1970s, 88, I could pick it out at the moment. They're still at home, the diaries. And they were an open diary. There wasn't personal diaries about himself. It was what happened in the family during the day.
So every day he had an entry?
Yeah, he had an entry.
And over how many years do you have
those? As long as I could remember. And so he died in 1999, and I was born in 65. So
all of those years?
They're all those years are there.
And yeah. You have all of those?
Oh, I presume they're still there. I see them later. I wouldn't say when I saw them last, but they're still stored at home.
I was talking to a woman recently who discovered her father's diaries, and she was really excited. So the first thing she looked up was her date of birth. He had an entry, sat four rows of spuds. That was it.
Tom, what has been the highlight over the past 40 years?
I suppose meeting Vincent. We work very well together, and his wife is amazed that we haven't had a row in that time. You know,
has she come between you, or have you come between them?
Well, she takes the bus every time I come. I don't take it personally.
Vincent, was there a particular low point over the 40 years? Was there a particular publication that was very difficult, or were you ever threatened to be sued?
It's funny you say
that.
I'll tell you, in relation to that, I have probably a second or third cousin who was a managing a partner with a law firm in Chicago. Yeah. He offered to host the launch of Cathy Buckley on the 26th floor of their building.
Yeah.
About a week before the launch, he got on to me, he said, there might be trouble. Looking through the book, he thought there was racism in the part where Cathy Buckley had entered a change of letters with Mrs. Roosevelt. But he had to run it through whatever section of the law firm, and they passed it. And that was the only thing that I say.
So nobody ever threatened to sue you?
Exactly. They had nothing to get anywhere, Frank.
The story of Vincent Carmody's 9 books and their special places on... Which is best? My books are like my children. They're all equally good. Vincent Carmody, you've created a unique Listowel archive. In your own words, I've had a long love affair with Listowel. Listowel is indebted to you, to your wife, Kathleen, and your children, Kevin, Norma, and Karen, and your 9 grandchildren. My thanks to your Boswell, Tom O'Donovan, our travelling songstress, Karen Trench, and John Dalton, who came in to join us at this, and all of those who talked with us and all of our vendors. On today's programme, location sound and coordinator Siobhan Lewis, post-production Brendan Lewis, from me, Frank Lewis, until the last Saturday. Karen, you're going to sing us out with the Ballybunion anthem.
The Cliffs of Duneen, taken from the 1956 Shannonside Annual. I have travelled afar from my own native home, away o'er the billows, away o'er the foam. I have seen many sights, but no equal I've seen to the old rocky slopes by the cliffs of Duneen. I've seen many sights of Columbus' fair land, Africa and Egypt, so delightful and grand. But dig me a grave where the grass it grows green.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Quinlan's Fish Shops and Seafood Bars located across Kerry. Because at least one day of the weekend should involve someone else doing all the cooking. Order your delicious takeaway from Quinlan's today.